Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I'm very excited to invite back today Chris Curley, who was with us, I think we figured, not quite a year ago, maybe several months ago. And we talked back then when he was a guest with another group of professionals about Safe Mode Incorporated, and we wanted to have Chris back, along with his co-founder, Rachel Stoddard, who's also the assistant director for this organization, and one of their consultants, Chris Bray. So welcome to the studio, each and every one of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So let's just kick it off by telling our listeners who and what is Safe Mode, and what do you guys do?
Safe Mode is a corporation, a nonprofit that was founded by Rachel and myself that provides education and awareness for internet crimes against children. We offer presentations and programs for both children, parents, and even some law enforcement classes based on our background and knowledge of the subject.
Pretty simple. Well, not simple. It's anything but simple, isn't it? But it very important work. So tell us about your background, Chris, and then we'll have each of our other guests share a little bit about, because really this is an organization that's come together, not only because of course the need, but your professional experiences having to be protective of our families and our children.
Sure, that's where it all comes from. My background starts in law enforcement. I started in early 90s with San Diego PD, was there for a very short time, and then transferred to Phoenix Police Department. I worked there the rest of my 22 years. And for 13 of those years, I worked on the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. I started it in 2001 when the detail was formally formed after we received funding from the DOJ, from the ICAC grant, the recovery grant. And from then, I worked cases involving luring minors, sexual exploitation, which is the term for child pornography, sexting cases, things like that. So I was actually the individual that would sit at a desk and portray a 14-year-old minor online to try and lure these sexual predators on the internet to me rather than a real child. And so I did that for many years. That's how I came across Rachel. She'll introduce herself. Rachel was a prosecutor that assisted me in these cases when we worked together.
Great. Rachel, let's have you take it from there. What else has led you to this? And tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Thank you. So I've been an attorney in the Valley for over 10 years now. Back even when I was in law school, go Sun Devils at ASU. Back when I was in law school, I knew I wanted to do something helping children. And eventually I came to work at the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. And in there, they call it their Sex Crimes Bureau. So I was tasked with prosecuting sexual offenses against children, both hands-on offenses and then technology-based offenses. And that's where I had the privilege and opportunity to work with Chris. He was a phenomenal 14-year-old girl online, by the way. He was phenomenal at his cases. And so I had the chance to lead prosecutions, as Chris said, for the luring cases, child pornography, as well as cases involving any type of digital media and hands-on offenses against children. And then after being at the county attorney's office for several years, I transitioned over to the U.S. attorney's office, which is the federal prosecutor here in Phoenix. And I was tasked as they call it Project Safe Childhood. It's their nationwide initiative. And I was the Project Safe Childhood coordinator there, where it was my responsibility not only to lead the prosecutions and assisting the investigators, search warrants and things of that nature into these crimes, but I was also tasked with kind of liaising with not only community members and nonprofit organizations, but also law enforcement of every level, from tribal law enforcement, local, state, county, as well as obviously our federal counterparts, and kind of trying to come together to combat this problem on a state level, on a national level, and even international in many investigations.
Oh my gosh, so many questions already for both of you, but let's make sure we bring Chris Bray into the conversation as well. Tell us a little bit about yourself professionally, and then of course, how you came to be partnering with Safe Mode.
I first got into policing in 1977, was my first uniform police job, and that was up in Flagstaff. Graduate from NAU, go Lumberjacks.
Go Lumberjacks. We already did this off air, but we'll do it again. A big ASU NAU debate.
Absolutely. Got on in Phoenix in 1979. Patrol, traffic, wound up going into gang investigations back in the mid-90s. What kind of got me interested was crime as an enterprise and looking at people that chose to engage in criminal conduct as a business model. So when I moved over to Vice, I was looking at this from the same standpoint. This was very much organized crime. It was very much active in Phoenix. And the people that we're going after are young people, are women, are children, were not just preferential predators. They were in it for commercial gain. And I found that particularly offensive. And I retired from that after doing 15 years of that in particular, 36 years total service with Phoenix PD. And now I am sharing what I've learned through my investigative expertise with a variety of groups, both nationally and some international.
Fantastic. It is a complicated and convoluted, I don't know what the right word is, web mess. Social challenge, threat.
Mm-hmm. I use the term in the training, and I don't use it lightly, but it's right now we're still in a crisis of this type of
crisis
activity.
Crisis is the right word.
Yeah, this type of activity that's going on, happening online and in the real world with Chris's trafficking cases. It's a crisis. It's now more than ever. Per the FBI, they just put out an article that more children are getting solicited online by predators more than ever. In 2018. So that's why one of the reasons Safe Mode was formed. We can get into a little deeper, but it was because we want to assist law enforcement. Now we're retired law enforcement and retired prosecutors. We want to assist law enforcement with deterring those crimes and minimizing it as much as possible through education and awareness. That's why Safe Mode was basically formed.
And from a law enforcement perspective, you spoke, Rachel, to just all the different groups that you've worked with, right? It's a tribal issue. It's a local government issue. It's a national issue. I mean, international. How important is that everybody is really coming together with, and are we coming together? Is the technology there so that we can communicate across the lines? Like, that just seems massive to me.
Yeah, very much so. I know when I was acting as the Project Safe Childhood Coordinator, it was in some ways a matter of increasing that communication. So bringing basic investigative tools, not only the resources, but also the education to all the different agencies and coming together to try and get on the same page. Because what one agency may find to be an effective technique may not work in a very different type of community. But at the same time, and this is something we even talk about in our presentations, the technology is everywhere. I had the opportunity to work in up north in some of the tribal reservations, the Hopi Reservation, and up there. There would be communities that had very primitive essentials in their home. They may use coal for heating and things of that nature, but they had cell phones and they had internet and they had TVs. And so even in cases where some of the things that we may take for granted in metropolitan Phoenix, these kids are still having access to the internet. And so the internet is having access to them. And so it's increasing that education and awareness across the board because technology is across the board.
Safe Mode, it's around education, correct? That is the whole
Absolutely.
Platform, yes. Educating. And you mentioned, Chris, educating parents and oftentimes students and children and also law enforcement as well. So very different audiences. Can you speak to, you know, any of you could speak to, like, when you're in front of parents, what does that look like, sound like, feel like? And same thing with our kiddos in addition to law enforcement.
Well, with the parents, it's more we teach something about being very proactive, being educated among the devices the children are using, and then communicating with the children. So it's PEC is what I teach with the adults. We start with an introduction of, you know, how did we get to where we are today? So I always look back before I go forward. I look how technology has evolved, how has it interacted with our lives. And then I go forward saying, well, it's not going to go away. It's here to stay, and we all use it. And how do we deal with it, especially when it comes to the children, because they're being given things and have access to things far greater than we ever did as children, things that's on the internet that is just impossible not to see anymore. So our goal with the parents is to teach them to be educated about what your children are looking at and what they're doing and how to work with them with that, you know, being proactive, getting on devices, knowing what apps are on their children's phones, safe areas in houses, anything like that. So just giving them suggestions and ideas of how to protect their children online.
So we can pause there for a second. I have an 11-year-old at home. Yes. I have two in their 20s. They've already moved on. I just did this Facebook post the other day around really how much technology is influencing our inability to communicate and have eye-to-eye conversations. That's a whole nother, another topic, whole nother show. He loves Xbox. He doesn't have a phone yet. He doesn't have a tablet. And he just recently asked, can I have a headset so I can hear my buddies? Because now we've just recently let him start playing with kids that he knows. Mm-hmm. And we told him no, and boy, was he mad that he can't, you know. I said, I still want you in the living room. I still want to hear the conversation that you're having between and your buddies. I trust you and I trust them, but beyond that, I don't know more than that. So I've got to be his eyes and ears, right?
That's exactly what we like to hear, because yeah, there's so many parents that just don't realize what's going on in those. For instance, you chose gaming, on the online gaming. I have a 10-year-old, same situation. No headset unless I know who he's playing with. The console is in a public area, and it is only played when we're home. So, yeah, totally understand, because they don't realize, parents don't realize that they're playing with individuals that can talk to them and solicit them on these online games.
Right.
It's happened. I share in the presentations with the parents. There's one day I saw this, two articles, and same gaming console, and it just blew me away. There's a game out there where parents are actually paying tutors to teach their children how to play better. They're paying these tutors $25 an hour. And then in the same day, another article came out where there's sexual predators on this game, where this individual offered a minor to send explicit photos of himself for these, what they call online bucks, basically bucks so they could buy more things for the game. So same day, two different articles. There's a problem there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So not that this matters for our listening audience, but so that you guys know, we're having a little difficulty with our headset. The mics are all connected. We're good. So our listeners are and we're capturing it as a recording for the podcast. So if you want to take your headset, if that feels more comfortable, you're welcome to do that. So just know that the mics are coming in just nice and strong. Although it went whoop to one side, we all just looked at each other like, what happened? Okay. So before we talk about the work with law enforcement and really education for kids, I just can't help but stay and linger here. And I want to bring both Chris and Rachel in the conversation too. I'm not very tech savvy. I need to come sit in a class. Mm-hmm. My husband and I both do, because while I trust my son, as I just mentioned, I don't know enough about what he has access to, even though I'm in the vicinity. Like now, and I'm sounding naive because I am when it comes to TV and that sort of thing. But now he can pull up Xbox and he's got Netflix, mm-hmm. and he has YouTube, and the whole world. And I think Chris Bray said it: the whole world is available to him now.
Yes.
And I admittedly don't have any idea how to block some of that, shut it down. And so that's part of why I'm saying you have to do this in the living room, and I have to hear everything, because you know I don't know how to do it. It does it keep changing so rapidly? So if we are educated as parents, how often should we be re-educated?
No, and that's a fantastic point. And that's something that we discuss with our parents, is not only do we provide them, like Chris said with the articles, concrete examples of what's going on right now to the day of the presentation. We're constantly updating with statistics and articles and arrests and things of that nature. But it's also teaching them or giving them suggestions and guidance for best practices going forward. So, for example, with apps, when kids do get devices, I mean, the apps are constant. There's always brand new apps popping up and down. And
apps that hide stuff from mm-hmm. the parents. I mean, the apps mm-hmm. to hide the apps.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And it's establishing best practices so that, like we were talking about in a presentation we did, so that when it's, you know, 6 o'clock at night, you just got home, you're making dinner, your kid comes to you and says, hey, download this. You already have in place of, okay, you know, when you want a new app, we discuss this. Mom and dad get a chance to research it. We go through it. We encourage parents to gain information, not only through playing with it themselves and trying to do things on it, to seeing what they can get access to, but reading reviews online, reading reviews through the App Store or through the Android Store, whatever they have access to, and establishing with your child, like, this is going to happen first, and here's why. Because there are concerns that we have, and we want to make sure you're safe, and we also want to teach you how to be safe. Because the truth of it is, you can protect your child in your home I mean, I think all of us as parents try and keep our home this safe little bubble. But the reality is they're going to go out in public. They're going to go to a friend's house, or maybe there are different rules. They're going to go to the library. They're going to go wherever. The internet is everywhere and Wi-Fi is everywhere. And so it's not only educating yourself as a parent as to the dangers that are out there, but also establishing that communication and teaching you how to establish that education with your child. Just like with drugs or alcohol or sexual activity, it's now we're talking about you don't have to have the device talk or the internet talk of here are guidelines we can give you. We love you. We trust you. Here are the rules of the house and the rules of the family, and here's how we go forward with that.
Yeah.
And if something should happen, please come to us. Mm-hmm. Come to us as parents. That's what we tell the parents. Do not panic if you do see something or their child comes to you and does trust you, because most children, statistics show, most children are looking for guidance from their parents, believe mm-hmm. it or not, 70%. Yeah. So when they do come to you and they say, this is, I've done something. Okay, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
And then we're going to work on it. We'll
keep that
it.
Channel of trust open.
Absolutely.
And then know that you've got resources to help you, but make sure that they know that you're on their side.
Yes.
Step
exactly.
one in the predator's playbook is isolation. Mm-hmm. And the best way to get that isolation started for the victim from friends, family, support is the secret. And that secret generally takes form in suggestions, conversations. So a lot of the apps that we're talking about are geared towards isolating the target. And it's really harsh for me to refer to a child as a target. But we need to understand that that's exactly what they are.
Right. If we can't decode it, then we can't understand or even accept the severity of it.
Right. And the children don't understand that whole isolation doesn't mean a mom and dad are out of the picture. Mom and dad are that ultimate safety net. Like Chris was saying, the ability for the child to come forward and say, I made a mistake. And it's like, well, okay, we're going to work through this. We're going to do whatever it takes to come out the other side as a family and you in one piece and safe. First and foremost.
And because of Rachel's background, we get into that with the parent classes. You know, if it, God forbid, it does happen, here's the steps that it's going to take place. This is what makes Safe Mode kind of different than other places, is our background, is our experience in these types of crimes. So Rachel goes through a whole process. Okay, it's happened now. So now we're going to deal with it. And this is what you're going to see, or this is what's going to happen.
Wow. So when you're in front of parents, or well, let me back up. How do you get in front of parents? How can we help you as a business-to-business network? Who do you need to be in front of? What introductions do you need? And what does that look like for parents to be able to sit and learn and grow with you?
So real quick, like I said, Safe Mode is a new company. When you said we spoke a few months ago with my other business, Safe Mode was an idea. You know, it came from my background. It came from a meeting with Rachel, with my other business service company. I always put it out there that I had presentations available for this because of my background, but it was just an idea at the time we spoke before. And then when Rachel and I started talking, we met together and said, we really need to do these presentations together. And that's how Safe Mode was created. And so, as we were creating it this spring and summer, I also got with all my other ex-law enforcement partners that have done this job, internet crimes, and prosecutors. And we've all come together and said, I'd like you to be instructors and help teach this information that we want to give to the community. And they're all on board. And then that is, like I said, that's how Chris Bray got on board, his expertise in the child trafficking. When we did internet crimes, we didn't really deal with the child trafficking. We left that to his detail.
Yeah,
we'll
have that conversation
yes.
a bit, no doubt.
But it's part of the internet. I mean, it's there. Same with cyberbullying. We have a special speaker that's going to speak on cyberbullying, which again, she's an expert in the field. She's an ex-DPS officer that has her own company, but has agreed to be part of a guest speaker. And
great.
Like I said, then all of our other detectives that I've worked with in the past and prosecutors are all come together. So that's how Safe Mode is formed. And then when we were forming it this summer, we thought, let's be a nonprofit. Let's go out there, and I'm not worried, you know, we'll get funded somehow, we'll do it, but let's get out there. And so we can go into, like you said, where do we want to go? We'll go anywhere. We'll go into schools. We'll go into churches. We'll go into community groups, PTAs, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, you name it. We'll talk. You see, there's no problem with us three talking. We'll talk all night. We'll talk as much as we can, and we'll give, because we have so much information to give out, and we feel it's so important. You see it when you saw it on my Facebook page. This is, I love my business service company, but this is my passion. Best job I ever did for 13 years until I couldn't do it anymore, which we can talk about too. Best job I ever did. So it's my passion. I have so much knowledge and I want to give that to the public and I want to give that to the community because I've seen the investigative side and I've seen what happens to these children and with these predators. And I want to detour that and minimize as much as possible. So we will go anywhere, anyhow. And so anyone that wants to have a group of adults or children, we like to take them separately. We'd like to talk to the adults.
Well, sure. It's a different conversation, sure. Isn't it?
Very much so.
And then different ages, I like to handle differently. I have different, my background's in building technical education and curriculum. So I'm used to building curriculum. So I have programs for younger kids and, you know, that's just more of a, you know, I want to get in there even before they get a device in their hands. I want to, you know, the stranger danger for the internet, you know, however you want to phrase it, but it's avoidance or it's stopping before it happens. And then with the older kids, you talk about the consequences, you know, okay, if you push that send button, this is what's going to happen. And this is how it's going to affect you pretty much the rest of your life. And there's examples of that in history. So that's kind of the background of Safe Mode. And like I said, why we're different. And then, like I said, you were asking we'll talk to anyone anywhere.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's good to know though. So,
and in founding it, the point of becoming the nonprofit is we do want to be available to everyone. So we didn't want it to be we have all this information to give you and this is the fee we require. Like that is not our focus.
It becomes a stopping point for
exactly.
A lot of people.
Exactly. Especially when you come to public school districts, like we just did a 4-week intensive through a parent academy in a local school district. And we were able to do that because we are a nonprofit and we're able to get that information out to those parents. And the same thing with community groups, you know, funding may be an issue for them. And we didn't want that to be an issue for us coming to them. We're here to provide a service and educate our parents and our children, not focusing on, you know, what a retainer might be for us to come speak. That's not anyone involved in this. That's not our goal whatsoever.
You really don't know what you don't know. And so many of the people out there are not tech savvy. Even those that are tech savvy don't want to have this conversation. This is an icky topic. And when you try to, for a parent to break this down to a child, absent some kind of training or some kind of formal program, the message doesn't get put across clearly. And I think in my talkings with everybody, cops, prosecutors that haven't been in this arena, they really don't understand what's going on behind the surface as far as what a predator's looking for, how prone your child is to being exploited. Feds say 450,000 children are at risk in the United States. And I think that's low. I think you can't rule out any child as not having the potential for getting involved.
And there really isn't a socioeconomic status or a demographic that's more or less of a target. It is our children.
Absolutely.
Across the board. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. All right. So before we talk a little bit more about human trafficking and having your wisdom on that topic, can y'all tell me a little bit about your work with law enforcement as Safe Mode, you know, kicks into action and becomes this educational, really, platform? How can we help get the word out when it comes to law enforcement, or is that already in place for you guys?
The classes for law enforcement, I think one thing that we do want to focus on, and it's kind of been touched on, I know Chris can speak to this specifically, and even as Chris Bray just said, it's not an area of investigation or case or topic that people like to discuss or really like to know about. I know as a prosecutor, I don't know how many times I had people come to me and say, gosh, I'm so glad you do those cases. I could never do them. Well, someone needs to do them. We need to be handling this problem. I mean, this is a significant issue. But understandably, because of what is entailed in working these cases, it is extremely difficult and it can take an emotional toll and is something that you need to be prepared for going into. Now, Chris obviously did it for several years, investigated for several years and was really in the thick of it and having these direct conversations with the predators. And then myself as a prosecutor. So we've had the perspective of working them and we now have the perspective, kind of the aftermath of getting out of it and kind of, I think of it as entering the non-icky world a little more. I mean, we used to live in that space so much. And so it's really important to us, and I'll let Chris speak about his personal experience, but it's important to us to talk to those who are still working them, to give them some guidance, give them some insight, give them a little perspective.
Yeah, the law enforcement is what we want to get out there with them, is that we want to go to any agency that investigates these types of crimes and talks to these officers and say, and like I said, it's coming from people that have actually done it. You know, I sat there for 13 years. I saw what you're seeing. I know what you're dealing with. I dealt with it. I'll explain how I dealt with it. I'll give you suggestions how I dealt with it until the time came where I couldn't deal with it anymore. And I saw changes in myself that were scary. And I had to take a step back and back away. And I like to share those experiences with others. And what I realized, what I didn't realize at the time when that happened, is I wasn't alone. I saw a lot of detectives come and go in that detail. Most detectives maybe last 4 or 5 years. And like I said, I did it 13 just because I love the job so much. And, you know, officers have this persona of we're tough and nothing can hurt us and we don't need to cry and be upset, you know, and that's starting to break down a little bit more. We see it more and more, but that's the type of feeling I had. Like when I couldn't do it anymore and I couldn't do the investigative side anymore, it was like an identity that had kind of gotten away from me, and I didn't know how to deal with it. But then, like I said, I didn't realize I wasn't alone. There were so many other officers out there that had done the same thing and similar jobs, maybe the hands-on cases and things like that. They felt the exact same way. So with the law enforcement side, we just want to share our stories and our suggestions of how I did deal with it for so long and then how to feel afterwards. And it's okay to feel that way. And I think coming from an actual person that did it and from other officers that are on our team to talk about it brings it home to law enforcement more when you hear from someone that actually was one of yours.
Gives people permission to feel what they're feeling and have a tactical way to deal with it.
Yes.
If you don't feel the word we've been using today, icky, when you're investigating this stuff, then something's wrong because you should be. And that's okay to feel that way, but it's how you deal with it. And then you're looking at the big picture overall. But yeah, so that's the part of the law enforcement side of it. We could also, you know, talk about cases and things like that. What worked for us was what didn't. Rachel could talk about the prosecution side of it. Hey, this is how I like to see a case prepared. Things like that would be real helpful to current law enforcement officers that are doing this because the main goal is to get the bad guy in jail.
Yeah, right. So, protect the children.
Yeah.
Help parents be aware, and on the law enforcement side of things, make sure that there's an end to this crisis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rachel said it perfectly the other day and when we were talking with other law enforcement officers that are doing this, is that every one of us has a story. Every one of us has something to talk about who did this type of job. So it's real important to get out there to current law enforcement officers that are doing this because it's not going away. I mean, these crimes aren't going away, and these details and the funding's not going away for this type of investigation.
Yeah. And some agencies are very large. Some are very small. There may be it may be in like some of the tribal agencies. There's one person, like literally, there's one person that's gotten some training and is working these cases. And so it's trying to provide across the board, but provide a network of support, just like we're doing with our parents and education and awareness and trying to empower them. It's also in working with law enforcement who are doing these, it's empowering them of the fantastic work that you're doing, because honestly, it can be a very thankless job. So showing that appreciation for them and telling them you're making a difference. And also, it's okay. It's okay when you have a bad day, because you're going to have a bad day. If you don't have a bad day, that's when you need to be worried.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a warning sign.
Yeah. I mean, I was fortunate in that the first quote-unquote viewing, because as a prosecutor, we were required to view the images, for example, of child pornography. And I was very fortunate. And then in my first viewing, I went with a prosecutor who had been handling these cases for a few years. And, you know, I had a vague idea of what, you know, I'd read descriptions. I thought I knew. I thought I knew what I was getting into. I've been a prosecutor for several years now. Okay. Yeah. And the first second it came up in that first video, and it was definitely a very altering experience. And I was lucky in that I was there with someone who had handled it. And as soon as we left, you know, we got through it. And as soon as we left, she was phenomenal. She was, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. No, how are you doing? Let's talk about this. Let's talk about what we viewed. Let's talk about, I mean, she did a phenomenal job, which I've always been very thankful for.
It's likely what carried you into this partnership with Chris and Safe Mode, because you had that someone looking out for you.
Yep. And I tried, when prosecutors would express interest in working these cases, I would take them with me to a very tame as it can be, kind of a tame viewing, and walk them through the same process and tell them it's okay if this is too much. Yeah. And if you're interested in it, that's great. And here's how we approach it. And here's some techniques that I use. Here's how to discuss or not discuss these issues with your family when you go home. Here's how to not take it home with you or take it into your family relationships, because that can be a very difficult thing to manage. We're obviously extremely appreciative of law enforcement who are working these. And so we want to provide perspective and support so that they can continue to do that work.
Well, and to your point earlier, if you're not doing it, we need people to do it. So we've got to give them support, the accolades, the encouragement, the hope, and everything, and the of course, knowledge and expertise, because we've got to have people on the front line who are there to stop this from happening.
Absolutely. And that's another reason Safe Mode was formed, is that we really want to work with law enforcement in deterring this, because they are extremely overworked and busy on any type of cases, but especially these, and they don't have time to get out there and educate on a consistent basis, whereas that's why we do. We want to get out there on being consistent, and repetitive and all the time. So we want to work with them so we can assist them. If they have a problem in a certain area, a certain school, hey, send us there. We'll go, we'll take care of it. You know, we'll do the education part of it. That would be huge for us. So yes.
Good. Good to know. I'm very curious to hear from Chris Bray around human trafficking. It's an area that I only am aware of based on, you know, social media and what little news I pay attention to, but I don't think I have any idea about the magnitude of what's involved and how it's right here in our own backyard. So could you start by defining for me and our listeners just really what is human trafficking in the basics of it?
Okay. First and foremost, human trafficking is not about movement. So the concept that moving somebody across the border is human trafficking, no, that is not. That's smuggling. Smuggling is about moving stuff. The stuff can be drugs, can be guns, it can be people, but it's stuff. And the relationship with the smuggler ends at the point of delivery. Human trafficking, on the other hand, that relationship continues. It is about compelled labor. And that compelled labor can be anything from the hospitality industry, construction, landscaping, nail salons, and it is about compelled labor. Labor is compelled through force, fraud, or coercion. Force, yeah, everybody's got that idea. They know what that is. Fraud is based on a lie, whether it's a sham marriage or promises of education. Takes a lot of different realms. Coercion is about a third-party threat. Generally speaking, you're going to do what I tell you you're going to do because I'm threatening your family. And that's very real. Sex trafficking, on the other hand, is about the commercial sexual exploitation of children and adults, primarily young children and young women. To say that it's here, it's alive and well and growing, is a gross understatement. There is such a thing as organized crime. The primary three moneymakers for organized crime has been and will continue to be drugs. And second has become human trafficking. Reality of it is I can sell that person over and over again. I can only sell that drug once. Hmm. It's used and then that's it. But a person, I can sell them indefinitely. And there's a lot of money to be made there.
And I'm fascinated that we're having a conversation not just around sex trafficking. I mean, obviously that's huge, and as a parent is what I'm aware of, but mm-hmm. I never looked at it through the lens of human trafficking is also selling these people, these individuals for labor and crime and whatever else.
Absolutely.
So when you define human trafficking, we really need to open up the lens and say this, yes, sex trafficking is a piece of it, and it's also human people or capital as a commodity.
When we focus on a problem with that laser-like intensity that we like to talk about, there's blinders put upon the investigators to some extent. Once outside your little realm, you might be missing things. So 21 years I'd been a cop before I started investigating sex trafficking. And I had no idea what it was like. I had no idea. I would be willing to say that for Chris or for Rachel, either one, that until they actually got hands-on, they had no idea what you were getting into. And that's part of the training that we want to provide other officers and prosecutors and the community, is that this is going on here. And what are we going to do? Prepare.
And remove the blinders. Remove the
blinders. Remove those blinders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if I'm only thinking about it from a perspective with one incident or one type of situation, I may be missing clues for other people that I could save and help.
Exactly. And if we have one child that is the target of a predator, that is rankles me to the core. How about, though, we've got somebody out there that is targeting multiple children, not just for personal use, but to
as a business.
Profit mm-hmm. off of that.
There's a video I share in the parent presentation. It was a news story. A ticket agent person was working, and two young girls came up to her with first-class tickets mm-hmm. and no bags. And they were going far away. And she could have passed them through, and they had the proper identification and moved them through, but she goes, something's not right here. Why are these two young girls with first-class tickets and no baggage? Where are they? What's going on? So she asked them, oh, we met somebody that provided us these tickets. We met them online. They promised us a weekend, something like that. She halted everything, called the police, and turns out, yes, it was someone they had met online and offered these tickets to come meet with them. And if it hadn't been for her just taking off the blinders and putting her finger up going, wait a second, something's not right here. The law enforcement officers they interviewed in the interview said, we would not solve those girls again.
So now you've just opened up Pandora's box for me because this gal may not necessarily be a parent and going for her education to protect her own child. But now we're talking about service workers Absolutely. In travel industry, hospitality, mm-hmm. restaurants. I read just the other day on social media an article, and I think it's probably been circling around for a while, but a similar story about a flight attendant yep. who yep. saw a young gal distraught looking out the window, and the gentleman wouldn't let her talk. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with that. But thank goodness we had someone like that who said, this is not okay. So will Safe Mode also then, is it planned? Do you have plans then to help educate our service industry, our eyes and ears are all around us?
That goes back to the beginning where I said, we'll teach anybody anywhere.
Yep,
so
okay.
we've been offered already. It's been great. We've only been a true nonprofit corporation since August, and we've already been offered locations to teach, to bring anyone in we'd like, any groups whatsoever.
Good.
And they've offered these incredible spaces for us to teach in throughout
Very
the
good.
Valley right now.
Go ahead.
Look at it from just the, where are these victims going to intersect with somebody that might actually rescue them? They live in a very cloistered world. You have the person that's trafficking them, and then you have the person that's using them. And then you may have other people that are in that same situation with you. So you are constantly being reinforced that this is okay. Your normal is being reset. Abnormal becomes your new normal. And once the victim starts identifying as that person, their chance for rescue starts to drop because they don't know that they're a victim.
They play the role. Yeah.
They play the role. They become the role. That's difficult. So everybody needs to be aware because nurses, firefighters, store employees, front clerks at hospitality, all of these people that may be that one person that intersects needs to be aware of what to look for.
And even in the article or the video like Chris was talking about, these girls, they genuinely believed that they were going to do like a modeling. They were going to be a model and they were going to be in a music video. And they thought it was so cool and so fun. And when law enforcement was interviewing and speaking to them of, you know, these are the dangers, this is going to happen. And one of them said, well, I wouldn't let that happen.
Right. They're still not wrapping their brain around that they've completely been taken advantage of.
And trying to explain to them, sweetheart, you may not have had a choice. It's not where you go and you can say yes or no. And so it's educating the community to kind of be eyes and ears. It's educating the parents so that, and us, not only us, a Safe Mode working with the children, but educating the parents so they can educate their children as well. Because, you know, as we tell the parents are first and foremost, you are the first line of defense for your child. I mean, it's the case just in anything, but I mean, I'm baby-proofing my house because I'm trying to be the first line of defense for my toddler. But when it comes to this, like, you are the first line of defense. You have that innate trust with your child. And so it's helping them protect themselves.
There was something in the notes that you had shared with me, and now I'm forgetting the term, but...
Is it grooming?
Well, go ahead and talk to grooming while I look.
That's what Chris was kind of speaking about, how they and Rachel, how they promised these children a bigger and better deal, and they groom these children. And grooming is basically just a term that's used where they lower the inhibitions of the child to get them to do something they probably maybe not.
It's engaging. It's enticing. Absolutely. It's preparing them for becoming a victim.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we teach the parents what to look for in these grooming techniques. You know, if they're receiving all of a sudden they're receiving clothing or gifts from strangers. I mean, it happens that these things get sent to them or given, you know, all different things. So we teach the parents to watch out for signs.
And what age range are we talking about? So give an example. My daughter is somewhat of an influencer when it comes to social media, but she's a young adult and she does, you know, she'll get things in the mail for free.
We've had cases as early as 7 years old to, you know, adults, like Chris was saying with the trafficking. But yeah, it starts as soon as they get a device. And that's a question that we get asked a lot. You know, when do I give my child a device? Well, that's not up to us. We don't try to lecture. We try just to give advice and suggestions. It's up to you when you want to give your child that device. But they're getting them younger and younger every day. That's why access is more and more prevalent. They're getting devices. I mean, how many times do you see the child sitting at the dinner table at a restaurant with the headphones on and watching a movie while the rest of the family's engaging in eating together? Because they're trying to keep the child quiet, I understand. Yep. But you're starting it right there. You're starting the process of them being in front of a screen instead of interacting.
That becomes then their source of entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It is sometimes easier, right? If I go home and I have a work day and I want to be with my son and I've got work to do and he's begging me to be in front of the TV and, you know, mm-hmm. there's days I'm like, go ahead and do it, right? And mm-hmm. just, yeah. And yet, I'm very aware that I am training him to let that be his excuse to not have to feel boredom or to interact, let alone, you know, opening up the world to him, you know, where he may not be safe. The term that I was remembering, and this may or may not apply to right where we're at in this conversation, but one of the things that I read in, Chris, I think your description around Safe Mode is Internet Crimes Against Children, and provide practical guidance, of course, and then how to recognize, this is the term, minimize secondary trauma. Is that kind of what we're talking about right now? Like, how would I know is secondary trauma? How would I, the signs of what my kid might be experiencing if he or she is holding a secret? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah,
it can be. So there are kind of two folds to it. One in secondary trauma is like we were talking about with law enforcement. We discuss it as the trauma that happens to law enforcement when they work the cases secondary to working cases. But then there also is, and this is something Chris and I talk about in our presentations, of if your child has been a victim of any kind, whether someone has sent them something they didn't want, asked them for an image, sent them conversation, or, you know, they'd stumbled, quote unquote, stumbled across a website or something like that, it's working with them, like we said, the effective communication and going forward from there to not make it a more traumatic experience.
Okay. Both from the law enforcement end and how to handle what's showing up for you emotionally, mentally, physically, everything, and also from a family perspective, making sure that we're protective of our child as they work their way through the healing.
Yes, okay. Very, very, very much so. And it's something that I discuss in more detail in our classes is kind of the difference that I saw from a firsthand experience with families and working with hands-on offenses where children had been sexually abused and the online cases, the difference in how parents first approach those first few minutes with the kids, and there's a term in the industry of disclosure disaster, but how they approach those first few minutes and working forward with it, the parents who were receptive and loving and like Chris said, took the breath and focused on their child as opposed to reacting, which would be incredibly natural response. I mean, incredibly. Those children then were so much more prepared and supported and able to work through it and work through the feelings they were having from having been in that situation than the parents who didn't receive that initial response from their child. And I saw families who it was an incredible thing to see, you know, something devastating and traumatic. They were able to turn it into this amazing, beautiful bonding experience because the trust and the love that was shown between that parent and child helped them not only in that experience, but then going forward for the rest of their lives in the future.
Our son tends to get in trouble at school every now and again. I laugh and smile only because I sent an email today to his art teacher. It's like probably time for us to sit down and have a conversation. And I'm always pleased that he's very candid about how those interactions go. right? I mean, granted, we sometimes have to pull it out of him what his role is in it because, you know, it's always about the teacher. Mm-hmm. But we're always looking to reassure him that this is an open communication. We're here for you. We want to, you know, make the best out of this for you and your teacher. And the only way we can do that is if you're honest. And that reinforcement, you know, in a very small little scale example, we're obviously my example pales in comparison to what we're really talking about. But that's my little world, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the child is picking up clues from you, mm-hmm. your response, verbal and nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
If you pass out and fall on the floor, then the child learns, oh, my God, this is a horrible deal. I don't want my parents to hurt, so I'm not going to tell
want
them.
Her, I don't want her to hurt. Yeah.
I don't want her to hurt, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, what did we just do? We unintentionally reinforce that first objective in the Predator's playbook is isolation, because now the child feels like they can't talk to you about that because you did make such a big deal of it.
Either anger, frustration, tears, what, whatever the, you know, the, as Rachel said, the overwhelm, mm-hmm. if yes. I can just hold off on the overwhelm and perhaps share that with my spouse or a professional, but just meet my kiddo and reassure them that I love them.
Mm-hmm. It's your child's trying to protect you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Right.
And I don't want to make mom cry. I don't want to, you know, make dad punch a wall or any kind of those responses.
And the perpetrator on the other side knows this about my relationship with my child, don't they? Who is the perpetrator? Have we covered that? I mean, let's talk.
I love Chris's answer to this.
There isn't one. I mean, there is no, people ask me all the time, what's a sexual predator? I said, it's a male, female, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, age from very young, age of 13 sometimes to 90. I said, there is no, I've arrested and investigated all types of predators from, like I said, from men, from women, from the youth, all different professions. There was something we put up on a presentation last week about, there was a sting operation where they arrested 25 different individuals and they listed their professions. Doctors were on that list, lawyers, police officers, teachers. There is no description of a sexual predator. I mean, it can be anyone, and we teach that. It's under the section I call it, you never know. I mean, it happens to me. It happened a friend of mine in high school that I knew, I thought I knew, you know. Years later, we went our separate ways, and I turned out to be a police officer. He turned out to be a sexual predator, and I was doing time. I'd arrest a homicide detective in my own department. I mean, it can happen to anyone at any time. And that's what we really teach the parents too about that is no one is safe. You know, like I said, back to those blinders, take the blinders off because no one is safe and you don't know. It could be, and a lot of people think too that the sexual predator, even though we're talking about online a lot here, is a stranger. It's not. It's someone they know. They're using the internet as a tool to mm-hmm. continue access with that person, but most of the time it's someone they know. They've met somewhere and maybe at some type of community place or a neighbor or something like that, and or at school or something, and they're using the internet to continue that conversation and that access.
When we talk about human trafficking and we're talking about, what's the term you keep using, Rachel, around the physical?
We call them hands-on offenses.
The hands-on offenses. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking to Chris Bray. Is there a perpetrator profile? Is it a little bit more narrowed down?
All ages, both sexes, all races.
The answer is the same.
It's the same. It's somebody that is hardwired to prefer children. It is somebody that is hardwired to make a living off the misery of others. My side of this coin is about commercial side.
Yeah, and I appreciated the way that you, let me interject for a second, the way you set the tone when you introduced yourself was so powerful for me that this, you began to look at this from the business perspective, that
absolutely.
These are people who are looking to financially gain and profit off of the destruction of others.
If I could put it the most simply for sexual exploitation, rape is not about sex, it's about power. Me taking away as a predator, taking away your choices of with whom, where, how. I take away all your choices. I take away your power, your autonomy, your personal sovereignty. So why is it that society kind of looks at, if I obtain sex from someone at gunpoint, everybody nods their head and says, yeah, that's rape. That's sexual assault. Absolutely. If I do it at a knife point, okay, everybody's going to say, yeah, that's if because I outweigh you by 100 pounds and I have 40% more muscle mass and you are convinced that I will pummel you to jelly, if you don't submit to me, that is rape. Why does it change when I put money on the table? I am taking away that person's ability to choose.
Absolutely.
Okay, so sex trafficking is rape for profit. Bottom line, the myth of the willing participant is just that. It's a myth.
Right, because of all the mind games and all the manipulation that
Absolutely.
Take place. They've lost that. We used the term, I think, role earlier. They've accepted that story and that role.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, which is obviously becomes a victim mentality. I don't know if that's the right term for it, but
it is.
Fascinating. Yeah. So how do we keep our kids and our young adults? Let me back up. Is this boys and girls? This is men and women being sold into this slavery?
Absolutely.
And any age? So from the victim perspective, what's the profile for a victim when it comes to human trafficking?
If you try to form that profile, you're going to miss things.
Okay.
But what they're finding
here, I keep trying to do that in this conversation, but it's so important for you guys to keep saying that you know, we all need to be protected.
Yeah, but yeah. If you want to, you know, say, okay, sex trafficking, what does it look like? The average age of entry for females is 13. The average, and that's nationally. Locally, I think they have found it to be about 14 and some change. The average age for males getting into sex trafficking is also 13. I think what kind of makes people do a double take, though, is the average exit age for women is about 34, 36. And that is coincidentally also the average age of mortality for this victim's group.
And when you say exit age, that's when they're
getting kicked. Of sex
they either choose to, or they're done with, they're discarded.
Yes,
both.
The youngest I've seen working the streets of Phoenix is 11.
Gosh.
The oldest sit I have seen working the streets of Phoenix is 67, a great grandmother. So when you look at that age range, that person has gotten into the life. She doesn't know how to get out.
Yeah.
The average age of entry for males, like I said, was 13. The average exit age is 25. That's not the age of mortality. That is the age at which they are no longer marketable.
Mm-hmm.
You're no longer marketable at 25. That's how, quote unquote, the life runs you over. It's a very high stress, high mortality, high morbidity behavior kind of lifestyle, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What a sombering topic.
Yeah. It's we talk about it. It's not a fun topic, but it's a needed topic.
So important.
Yeah. You got to know.
It's got to be discussed.
Well, we are so grateful that you guys are doing what you're doing and have made this commitment to help in so many different ways. And I'm excited that we get to be one of the first to share the Safe Mode story and put it out there so people are aware of what you're doing. I don't know who this question really is for. Maybe it's for, you know, all of you. What is the one thing that's hindering efforts to these problems? What would you say is the, is there a big thing that stands in the way of this? Is it education?
I think part of it's education. I think part of it is, it's that mentality of
it's not me.
It's not going to happen to me.
Not my kid.
Not going to happen to my child. Not going to happen to my family. And that's where we really try and open the eyes of everyone and saying, it does. It happens to everyone. It can happen to everyone if you don't take precautions, especially with now, like I said, the access to the technology we have and how the predators can now get in touch with these children at any given time.
And I think a driving force with Chris and I, and Christoph touched upon it earlier too, is having worked these cases and worked investigations, we know how many cases there are, how voluminous a problem it is. And as dedicated as the investigators are, there's never going to be enough investigators, enough law enforcement to tackle, you know, the millions of people that are in the nation or the millions of people that have access to the internet. And it's through no fault of their own. It's just a logistics and a practicality issue. And so that's why it's so important to us to try and get ahead of it. So that way, you know, every parent that we speak to and every child that we speak to and every community worker and school employee, et cetera, they're now kind of, they have the light bulb turned on. So now they're more aware, they're more active, they're more engaged. And so hopefully we can prevent cases from ever happening and ever having to be eventually investigated. Mm-hmm.
And we inform them about the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC. Mm-hmm. They're a huge part of this. They're the hub for all the investigations. So if any parent, if anybody, anyone has a concern, they can send a cyber tip, an anonymous tip to the cyber tip line through NCMEC, the National Center, and it will get investigated. Like I said, they're the central hub. They look at it, and then they send it out to the proper jurisdiction throughout the country.
And if it's not an if it's not a child and it's an adult, they have the National Human Trafficking Hotline. That number is 888-3737-888. They are the ones that track this, and this is a spinoff of the Polaris Project. But from 2016, 2017, they were up 13% in reports.
That's a success, the beginning of.
They're getting more reports, but that also means people are seeing it more. They know what to look for.
Okay.
So from the commercial standpoint, supply and demand.
Okay.
As long as there is demand, there will be supply. So when you look at the demand side of this picture, going after the end user from the commercial aspect is what is showing the most promise. So you have the manufacturer, if you will, you have the management, and they're going to stay in the business as long as they can make a profit off of it. Mm-hmm. And that depends on that end user. So we go after the end user. And far as sex trafficking and human trafficking goes, that's where we will make a difference.
Yeah, Chris mentioned the end user, and you know, we're with our job and what we teach about the sexual predators and how they're possessing these images sometimes for the sexual exploitation. They always talk about, well, you know, especially the times when I interviewed these individuals, a lot of times they would say, well, they're just pictures, and I'm not really harming anyone. Well, they don't realize that they're every time they download and they possess these images, they're victimizing those children that are now, some are adults now in these images, that they're still being victimized over and over for the rest of their lives. And if it wasn't for them downloading it, if it wasn't for the supply, the need, then it wouldn't exist. So they, once we try to explain that to them, that, you know, you still are victimizing these children, even if you didn't put hands on, they seem to maybe get a little bit better, but they still try to, you know, try and downplay it as much as they can, saying, you know.
Right, to make them feel normal. Sure.
To justify their actions.
Yeah,
absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
And in many instances, those images are actually being used as currency because mm-hmm. it's on a trading business. It's on a trading basis. And so those images are now, in effect, currency in that marketplace. So that's what's driving that engine.
Yeah. Wow.
And it is. Like we've talked about today, it's a technology itself is and can be extremely overwhelming just because it's constantly changing. The problem that we're facing, as Chris said, is a crisis, and it is very terrifying and very overwhelming to parents. And so it's our goal through Safe Mode to help them make it a little more manageable, to be educated, to be empowered going forward and protecting their families and protecting their communities, and giving them suggestions and kind of plans of attack, if you will, how to move forward. Because as Chris said, the technology isn't going away, and yep. the predators aren't, I mean, we're trying to put them away and law enforcement is, but they're not going away. And so it's empowering our community so that we can move forward and protect our children as best we can.
Yeah.
And part of our mission too is to keep it going after. I always say what I've always promised when I started Safe Mode is I don't want to just teach a class and then walk away. You know, we provide after every presentation, I provide my phone number, my email address, the website's being built. I want it to be interactive. If you have something after you've left and you need a question answered, We're here because it's not fair for me just to give you an hour and a half presentation and then walk away and never talk to you again, especially with how technology is changing, ever changing. And if you have a question or something I can help you with, if I can, I will. I will send you to the right person. That's part of my goal and part of my promises when I started this organization.
Yeah. Wow. We are out of time, but I really, again, can't thank you enough for the work that you're doing, for taking an already very heavy career and continuing on beyond, you know, when it's been a paid gig and your livelihood. This is obviously a passion for each of you, and we need you. So I thank you, and I hope our listeners obviously are a little bit better informed, and I know I certainly am. My mind has just like expanded to having to be more vigilant than, is that the right word? Yeah, mm-hmm. than yes. I ever have been before on behalf of not only myself as a woman, but a parent of both young adults and my small kiddo. So thank you. So you mentioned, Chris, that the website is currently being built.
Yes, it's currently being built. It's under intersafemode.com. But if you go to that website, you'll see links to our Facebook, which is active, our Twitter account, and our Instagram account. We do have our social media, but we use it for the good. Mm-hmm.
There is that, yeah.
But if anyone is interested in a class, putting on a class, let me know. They can email me, and my email is ccurley@intersafemode.com. And Safe Mode's phone number is 602 647-5140.
And you are saying enter safe mode. Enter safe. ENTERSAFEMODE.
That is correct.
.com. Mm-hmm. And it will get you to the social media pages until the website
is being currently built. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Great. And Chris Bray, that's how we get a hold of you as well, through safe mode.
Chris will always know how to find me.
Yeah. We go way back.
Professional.
We didn't talk, but Chris was actually when I got out of the academy in 1993, Chris was my first training sergeant. Oh, so that's how far back we go.
Yeah, yes. way back.
Yes, and we've kept in touch through our careers, yes.
Love this. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you each again for spending your time with us and sharing the important work that you're doing. We'll have, obviously, the podcast replay up forever. And you know that we have an extended invitation for have you come back again. Let's keep this conversation going over and over again, and let us know how we can help get you in front of the people that really can help make a difference. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
You bet. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X from within Max 6 Conscious Capitalism Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right. We lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.